Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Skip Button, a podcast all about the music you love to hate. I'm your host, Ben Marzalan. Today, I want to talk about the Black Eyed Peas. The Black Eyed Peas are a hip-hop group that, since 1998, have gone from boom-bap bastions to crossover superstars to whatever the fuck they are now. Along the way, they've received 6 Grammy Awards, sold an estimated 75 million records, and have garnered no shortage of hate. As per usual, we're here to talk about that last part. And by we, I mean myself and 2 very familiar faces to the Skip Button, Matt and AJ. Hi, AJ.
Hi.
Hi, Matt.
Hello.
Have you guys been bumping any Nickelback since the last time we spoke?
No.
I did see that they were going on tour, though, and Stone Temple Pilots were opening for them, and just made me think, if I were Stone Temple Pilots, I would feel really kind of ashamed to be opening for them.
But that sounds like what's his name died.
Who died?
The lead singer of Stone Temple Pilots died.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But was the pot not at all sweetened by the fact that they were just going to play that one album, All the Right Reasons, from front to back? Like, if you're going to watch Nickelback, that's a pretty tight way of watching Nickelback.
I mean, again, like, it'd be tough because, like, you would go into that thinking you'd want to do it, and then you'd realize that you only enjoy, like, a third of the album, and you would not survive, like, the deep
right.
cuts, you know?
I think that now I've, like, just as a defense mechanism by doing this show, I've, like, had to force myself to rebrand myself as a huge Nickelback fan, so now I'm just like, yeah, no, I'm there.
Well, you did it to yourself.
I did it to myself.
I also think your audience needs to trust that you're objective, so I'm not actually sure that you should be
That's fair.
Yeah.
I'll edit it out, but I fucking love Nickelback.
So how about them peas?
Also, the other thing is, did I tell you guys that my dad listened to that episode? And he was like, it was great. I never had heard of Nickelback before. I had no idea who they were. And after the show, I listened to them. They're not bad.
Damn. I'm surprised he got through the whole thing with no context of what we were talking about, but I'm glad he liked it.
That's a dedicated father right there. Okay, so I want to talk, obviously we're here to talk about the Black Eyed Peas and specifically the reasons that they garner so much hatred. And NPR had a really good article that I read where the writer kind of, Ann Powers, kind of laid out all of the things that people say about Black Eyed Peas. You know, basically the reasons that she listed out that I came across like time and time again are, A, they're super, super commercial, like in a blatant sort of very like plasticky way. But the thing that I came across a lot that kind of rubbed me the wrong way was that so many people said that the Black Eyed Peas started getting bad when Fergie joined. Which are we all laughing because that's a ridiculous sentiment?
Can anyone name a single Black Eyed Peas album from before Fergie?
Yeah,
exactly.
It implies that we like enjoyed them and they were like, yeah, it so went downhill with Fergie. Like, you did not hear of them until Monkey Business or Elefunk, whichever one came first.
Yeah, and the first time I saw that, I had the same reaction, and then I kept seeing it, that like Fergie somehow ruined this group. Like, okay, so Vice had a series called Do They Actually Suck? Which is sort of like the prototypical version of this podcast.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, was
not intending to participate in this cultural thievery.
Yeah, well, Dan Ozzie can at me if he wants to. Also, especially since he wrote this, I don't give a fuck if he's mad at me about this. he wrote about Fergie, quote, "Now, we are absolutely not going to open up a gender-charged discussion about women's place in hip-hop, nor are we going to sit here and fall back on the old cliche that women ruin bands."
But
they don't.
Oh, okay.
But a woman named Fergie did, in fact, 100% absolutely ruin the Black Eyed Peas. And it's not her fault per se, but the inclusion of Fergie into the band marked a distinct heel turn in how the Peas wanted to be perceived. They no longer seem interested in having cred as rappers, they just want to make loads of cash. They adopted this new, weird, nerds from the future look and started releasing genetically engineered pop songs. I disagree with every single clause in this.
Yeah.
First of all, he implies that that they're sort of nerds from the future, as he puts it, was when Fergie joined. But that happened years after Fergie joined.
Yeah.
And it's just, it does seem that he's like, I'm not going to be sexist, but
I also feel like he kind of, maybe he didn't intend to, but just his language seems to undo the points a little bit in that Fergie marks the heel turn. Exactly. That doesn't mean that Fergie joined and was like, we
exactly.
have to do this differently. It
right.
was like, okay, we have to make some changes in our sound. We want to be more commercial. let's maybe bring on a female singer that's more on the pop side. Like, so she's like maybe more of like an element of that. It's not
right.
her fault. Like,
and I want to get there because I'll explain why. But I think objectively, them becoming more mainstream and Fergie joining were two distinct occasions that just happened to happen at the same time. So, but in order to like figure out and put to bed this idea that Fergie ruined the Black Eyed Peas, we should probably talk about who they were before Fergie joined.
Yes.
So Black Eyed Peas, before Fergie joined, consisted of three rappers, Taboo, Apple the App, and I swear to God, guys, I tried to find out why that's his name, and I...
like App Store? I don't know, that's
it's
just weird.
It's pretty amazing. So Apple the App, Taboo, and then, of course, will.i.am. will.i.am was a rapper on the group, and he also produced most of their music, if not all of them. They are from L.A. They were originally signed to Eazy-E's Ruthless Records, which shocked me when I found that out. First of all, it occurred to me that I didn't know off the top of my head where they were from, which was only noteworthy because that's usually a piece of trivia I can rattle off about any major hip-hop group, because hip-hop is like very regional and tribal in the way that it's regional. And, I mean, they were signed to Eazy-E, who's like as West Coast as it gets. And the thing that struck me about their first album, which is called Behind the Front, was released in 1998, is it so overtly an homage to like East Coast hip hop?
Huh.
It's very much inspired by people like Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul and the Fugees. Have you guys listened to this music at all?
I mean, because I knew it was coming on.
Right.
But
did anything strike you about, like, were you surprised to hear this music out of the Black Eyed Peas?
Well, I kind of had a background that I knew they were more like a hardcore hip hop group at one point,
right.
But I think maybe what I was surprised about is, I think the Fugees is probably the biggest counterpoint. It really reminded me of the Fugees in a lot of ways, like just in terms of like the kind of consciousness to it. And like, obviously there's no like Lauryn Hill, i.e. I don't want to compare Fergie and Lauryn Hill, but like obviously there's no female presence on it.
Well, actually, so that's interesting because there was a member of the group, and for people listening at home, I just use air quotes on member.
Okay.
Her name was Kim Hill. And she was kind of the de facto singer of Black Eyed Peas. And she was sort of billed as a member of the group, but she's only on a couple songs. She's not on any of the album covers.
Hmm.
And if you have time, I would recommend, earlier today, New York Times has a YouTube series called Almost Famous, where they kind of do a video feature on people who were almost famous. And they did one on her. And she was kind of... she was just kind of like the de facto singer of Black Eyed Peas, but it struck me as interesting because it seemed like will.i.am was always really interested in having like a female perspective on his music, or if not a female perspective, then just like he liked the sound of women singing. It might just be as simple as that.
Dude, woke I am.
So I listened to this music. And there were a couple things that really stood out to me about it. First of all, I texted you guys this a couple days ago. I said if it was just for the first four albums, I would call will.i.am one of the greatest producers ever. His beats, they're not that unique on these first two albums, but they're so well produced. And they're so full of life. And they kind of just like jumped out of my headphones. One reaction that I had to almost all of their music was, it sounds like good music, but it isn't really. Like, if you listen to it passively, you're like, oh, damn, this bumps. But as soon as you kind of, like, really listen, you're like, the lyrics are fine, the hooks are fine. But I think will.i.am, and this is just something that, like, I kept thinking with every album, I was like, he's really good at taking all of these mediocre elements and making it sound really good. This is kind of what we were hinting at, which is just like, did anyone listen to these albums? The truth is, like, they weren't very successful. These albums weren't that, like, they were successful and they also weren't critically acclaimed enough to offset how unsuccessful they were. And so if nobody really listened to this and nobody really cared, how is it that 2 years later Fergie joins and somehow she ruined the group? So,
yeah, like implying they were at this like critical or commercial peak that they then descended from.
And it's not even about like sticking true to hip hop tenets, because I was listening to this and I was like, there's nothing objectively wrong with this, but I would much sooner listen to Mos Def or Tribe Called. There are just so many great boom bap albums out there that this offered nothing to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially strange just because of, you know, the assertion is that Fergie ruined the Black Eyed Peas. Not only does that not make a lot of sense because no one was listening to the previous albums, but also if you look at Ella Funk and Monkey Business, Fergie is the Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah.
Like she is the sound of the group.
If you quote a Black Eyed Peas line, chances are it's a Fergie.
Yeah, it just is a very strange thing because what you're pointing to by saying, oh, Fergie ruined the Black Eyed Peas, is a non-existent object. You have no idea
right. What
Black Eyed Peas minus Fergie actually corresponds to, even in terms of their old music, because it's not like there was any kind of unity in sound between the first two albums and Ella Funk.
Right. Do you guys think that, like, people were just like, why is there a woman in this group now?
I mean, the thing that I have trouble with is, like, clearly not a lot of people were paying attention from the beginning. I think it's just, it's always easy to kind of hate on female pop stars. So if you're going to already be mad at the Black Eyed Peas, it's easy to kind of direct that hate towards, like, I mean, to be honest, like, the other two dudes, you know, Apple DF and Taboo, apparently, like, the only thing that, like, they get hated on for is, like, them being, like, unknown. Like,
right. It's,
like, all the hatred is on will.i.am and Fergie anyway. The other two guys kind of get spared it.
And, by the way, I should say this. will.i.am, listening to these first two albums, is easily the weakest rapper.
Are you serious?
Easily. And I forgive him only because he's producing this whole thing and, like,
he's at least carrying the team in, like, one way.
In one way,
he's clearly,
right.
like, the creative director in some way,
yeah.
too. Yeah.
And maybe it's just because I'm so used to his voice and so I feel, like, oversaturated with will.i.am music. But every time he was rapping, I was kind of just waiting for someone else to rap.
Damn, man.
Like, Apple Diab and Taboo are clearly, were, like, clearly better.
I'm not going to remember the name Apple Diab.
Is it a really good name or a really bad name?
I don't know, man.
it's garbage.
I'm never going to forget it. I mean, I think one thing that I want to point out, though, is that as long as we're on, like, the commercialization subject, if you really want to think about it, and this was just the feeling I had listening to a few songs from, like, the first album, basically, was that...
Right.
That style of rap they're doing on the first two albums, that's what's popular in, like, the mid to late 90s.
Right.
Like, the whole, like, kind of consciousness post-Tribe Called Quest, like raucous records, like, you know, Mos Def, like Black Star, the Fugees, things
yeah.
like that. So I don't even see necessarily the turn to, like, Ferginess and the turn to, like, pop radio as that much of a turn. Because I'm like, well... You're doing what's hot in the 90s, which just so happens to be boom bap.
Right.
It just so happens to be, like, consciousness and spirit in your lyrics. But, like, there's clearly an attempt at, like, doing what's hot. It's just, you know, not what we see as hot in 2004, which is, like, pop rap.
Yeah, I agree with you. The one thing I would push back on, and it's actually something that the singer Kim Hill talked about in the video, was that, like, what was hot in hip-hop in the late 90s was... Obviously, it was boom bap, but it was also people like N.W.A. I guess that was a little early, but people like Dre and Tupac, and it was like definitely a definitively older style of hip hop. But I also wouldn't say that conscious hip hop was relatively popular. In terms
it was definitely kind of more on the underground side of things.
Yeah.
So you got a point with that.
So they released these two albums, and then here's what I read about what. Sort of where the shift came, is that, I'm going to read this quote, following the commercial failures of their previous albums and singles, there was doubt over whether the Black Eyed Peas would continue to record together. A&R executive Ron Fair approached them and suggested a crossover to a more mainstream pop sound. will.i.am in particular resisted the idea for fear that they would be seen as sellouts.
Wow.
However, after discussions and some writing sessions, the idea was pursued. And then, end quote, and then that's when Kim Hill left. Because she was like, I don't want any part of this. So first of all, it's jarring to hear will.i.am being the one that's like, no, we're not going to sell out. We're not going to...
Gotta keep it real in these streets.
Right.
Yeah.
But one way or another that happened, and in my opinion, I want to know what you guys think, shouts out to this A&R. So, okay, the album that we're talking about is Ella Funk, which
yes.
was released in 2004.
Yeah.
And it has... Let's Get It Started. It has Shut Up. It has Hey Mama. Obviously, Where's the Love? Like,
wow.
so many hits.
Like, absolutely just
yeah.
powerhouse of an album.
Right.
Like, from a commercial perspective.
Yeah.
And it's hard in retrospect, you know, maybe if I was living it in real time, I'd feel different. It's hard for me in retrospect to, like, be mad about that decision because of all the great music that came out of it.
Ella Funk, outside of the singles, is not something I'm trying to revisit here. I mean, they got a song in here called Labor Day, parentheses, It's a Holiday.
Ah, it's so good. It's so funny.
Thank you for the public service.
It is what about the Apple song?
The Apple the App song? That song is actually kind of powerful. And they also have a song with Papa Roach.
What the fuck?
Of course, for those of you that don't remember, Papa Roach is Cut My Life Into Pieces. This is my last resort.
I actually kind of like this song.
Bro, okay. No, you're entitled to feel that way.
But, okay, before we go
why
into
like, the show,
before we go into the track list,
yeah.
the one thing that I want to say about this album, for people who have never heard of this music, I feel like to call it a mainstream album or a pop album is actually kind of misleading, because trying to listen to it with fresh ears, how I felt about Ella Funk and also Monkey Business was, it was a group experimenting with a bunch of different genres, one of those genres being pop.
Yeah.
But like, you also hear funk, and you also hear like African genres, and you hear R&B. There's a lot of experimenting going on, and it also just happens to be very hooky and very catchy, and has Justin Timberlake and. But I feel like to call it like a mainstream pop album is easy in retrospect because all these songs became hits.
It like becomes pop
yeah.
when it becomes recognized. And it's
right.
just crazy because I think anybody listening to this right now that is like actually trying to pay attention to like the premise of this podcast, like one point for that argument that they're like not that bad is that while we might have our feelings on Ella Funk and Monkey Business, like don't deny like the eclecticism at least. Like
yeah.
they're clearly going for so many different things. They're balancing so many different planes genre-wise. Some of it is, like, damn near classic. Some of it is, like, unlistenable. But, like, they're going for some shit here. They're trying different things.
When I heard Labor Day, parentheses, it's a holiday, there was a part of me that, before I hit play, thought, maybe this is, like, a red herring, and this is their greatest song of all time.
No.
It wasn't. It's a really dumb song.
I just want to guess, like, because I don't really remember, is the conceit of that, like, let's party like it's Labor Day, like it's a holiday.
I could not wrap my head around it. They were like, I can't remember if they ever actually even say Labor Day in the song. It was like, it kind of felt like they wanted to like, put the Black Eyed Peas name on a holiday that no one's claimed yet.
Oh, word.
And they were like, what's a holiday no one cares about that we could just, like, maybe invest in, and maybe later it'll blow up and we can say that we did that.
And then, like, every Labor Day barbecue, you'll, like, bang Black Eyed Peas.
Exactly. Okay, so tying this back to Fergie. So A&R came up to them. We want to do a more mainstream sound. They started auditioning vocalists. So, point against anyone saying that Fergie ruined the group. They were doing this and then decided that they were going to recruit a new singer. So it's not like Fergie came in and like disrupt. This was happening one way or the other.
The history holds up under scrutiny that she was part of the move to the mainstream. Like,
right.
She's not. So already refuted that she ruined the group because they
right.
wanted someone like they wanted her presence in it.
And I found out that they had auditioned Nicole Scherzinger.
Wow.
The
okay.
Pussycat Dolls.
Damn, what is that timeline?
Right?
There's no Pussycat Dolls in that timeline.
Yeah, that's true. We'll do a Pussycat Dolls episode.
Nah, I don't either. I don't know.
You're not invited, so don't even trip.
Okay.
So, one thing that a lot of people talk about with Fergie's recruitment was that, for whatever reason, once she got recruited, Apple the App and Taboo... So, Matt has smiled every time I've said Apple the App. Just like a childish smile comes on his face.
It's like Pig Latin.
But so you start hearing their voices less and less. And what I said earlier was that it kind of seems like will.i.am, for whatever reason, was just really interested in writing for a woman's voice and like having just some sort of female vocal presence on his music. And so that led me to the question, why Fergie? Like, why was she the one that was picked? One thing that kind of stood out to me when I was, like, first listening to this album was the elephant in the room is that she's
the
white.
The elephunk in the room.
The elephunk in the room is that, thank you, Matt, is that Fergie's white. And part of that, there's an argument that it doesn't matter because we're dealing with a group, and I haven't mentioned this yet, but we're dealing with a group that is, Will.i.am is African-American, Apple the App is Filipino, born and raised, English is a second language, and Taboo is Mexican.
Dude, Fergie, I just looked it up just because I was, like, real curious about it. Fergie, I think, actually may be Hispanic.
Yeah, I was going to say, they definitely leaned into her ethnic. The fact that she was ethnically ambiguous is definitely something that they leaned into pretty hard.
Did this just, like, kill the whole part of
Wait, for real, Fergie's Hispanic?
She is. I literally just looked at it.
I mean, you can be white and Latinx.
That's true.
Like you could just be me. Like, yeah, I mean, like, it doesn't make her, like, not white to also be Hispanic.
No, it just makes me look like I didn't do any research, which...
She's English, Irish, Mexican, and Scottish.
Yeah, that's what it was. There was always, like...
Three of those.
Yeah.
You know?
Three of those are white. But either way, my point about her being white is not that I think there's a problem with the fact that she was white passing, or that even at the time there was a problem. I read in a review of Ella Funk where someone had written that they had recruited a blonde bombshell named Fergie.
Huh.
And I think it kind of struck me that Fergie was sort of this very, like, all-American version of beauty, of just, like, a woman with, like, long, flowy, dirty blonde hair and, like, very skinny but very voluptuous.
Like a kind of, like, post-Christina Aguilera kind of thing.
Right. And what I wrote down is it was, like, it would be, like, if Tribe Called Quest had released an album with Jessica Simpson.
Banger.
So my point being is that, like, they went from this very traditional, classical, boom-bap group to all of a sudden having a girl who looked like Jessica Simpson singing, not only singing on in their group, but singing at a time where they were experimenting with other explicitly black genres, like funk and like African music and dance hall. And
not
like
just
that,
but
yeah.
Like becoming very quickly, like, along with Will.i.am, like, the dominant voice on the album. You hear her more than anybody other than maybe Will.i.am.
Right.
So I definitely think there's something to her whiteness, but I don't necessarily even think it's because she reads as a Jessica Simpson type, just because I remember, in part maybe because of the sexism directed towards her, that there were always these, like, weird campaigns to be like, Fergie isn't attractive, even though she was obviously, like, intended to be, like, sexualized, like,
right,
in the marketplace or whatever. But for me, it's not even having, like, the credit of, like, a Jessica Simpson type at your side as much as it was, like, you know, this is now a group that has so much ethnic diversity in it that we're for everybody.
Mm.
And that's how we signal that, is that, like, we have every type of person in
right.
the group, and we make songs for everybody, and we have unity and blah, 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 blah.
She did also kind of fill the box. She kind of filled the void in the group of, like,
yeah.
someone that, like, kind of could be a white person. Like, they didn't have that. Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously the phrase, this is for everybody, quote-unquote, means this is for white people.
that's
the logic there.
Right.
Yeah.
But even with all of the points that we're making with, it's weird that they recruited this white woman, it's weird that Taboo and Apple the App are kind of, like, falling behind, and it's weird that they decided to go this overtly mainstream route, this is their best music. Then over, I would pick this over their last two albums any day.
You mean Ella Funk and Monkey Business?
Yeah. Even though I like this better, I felt so many of the same things listening to these albums as I did their first two albums, which is that it sounds amazing. I mean, especially on Ella Funk, like, there is such a liveliness and a vibrancy to the music on this album. Like, it's so full of life. But the rapping is still not great.
No. Dude, I mean, I guess if we have to, like, capstone the Fergie thing, at least on this album, like, whether or not you feel like Fergie went on to be a valuable musician or pop star or whatever, I think her contributions specifically on Ella Funk, like, are a very important part of this album. And I think she kind of killed a lot of it. Like, I thought she was good on it, you know?
I thought she was good, but the other... And I was asking the question, why Fergie? The other thing that struck me, besides the fact that she was white, was that, like, she's kind of a middle-of-the-road singer to me.
Mm.
She, like, I don't listen to her and think, like, damn, they got a superstar on their hands when I listen to her sing.
She does have a very unique voice, though. She's not the best singer, but it is a very, you can immediately identify her voice,
yeah.
And it is memorable.
Yeah.
It's also memorable when she peed her pants doing the national anthem.
But that actually, I mean, your point about her sounding really good is also goes back to the other thing that I keep saying, which is that, like, will.i.am is really good at just, like, making people sound good, even if they're not. And so they release Elefunk 2004. Monkey Business comes out in 2005. That has Don't Funk With My Heart, which is my favorite Black Eyed Peas song. I would say the biggest song off of that album is My Humps.
Which, I will admit, it's, like, an iconic kind of, which is a word that gets so thrown around and overused these days. I would argue My Humps had, like, a cultural moment. I think
right.
That's a dreadful song.
Yeah.
I fucking hate that song.
I don't love that song, but I think that was a turning point in the public perception of the Black Eyed Peas is because the sexual politics of 2005 were very different than the sexual politics of 2020. And I think that there was a huge backlash against that song because of, like, the hypersexuality
yeah.
of it.
Yeah.
And when you and I say that song isn't that good, that has nothing to do with it.
Correct.
It's because it's, like, kind of annoying.
She's got me spinning. I mean, I can literally hear the whole song, and
yeah.
I haven't listened to it in years. I can just, like, it's just, like, burned into my brain.
Right. It's, like, a little grating. There's nothing really interesting lyrically or melodically going on.
I really detest the idea. I mean, first of all, calling them humps is one thing.
Yeah.
Calling them my little lumps, like you're, like, going
my
to get
lady lumps.
It's like you have, like breast cancer, and you're, like, going to, like, see a doctor, like, oh, I gotta go get these lumps checked out. It's fucking dreadful.
Well, that's what's so funny. Like, at the time, it was so controversial for being so overtly sexual, quote
mm-hmm.
unquote. But in retrospect, we find this vocabulary really embarrassing and honestly gross. And I think on some level, what people may have actually been responding to wasn't even how overtly sexual it was. It was that it was gross.
It's gross, yeah.
and for me, what's interesting is it's really the first song where, like, this thing comes up that becomes, like, more sort of, like, readily visible in all their music, which is that, like, they write, like, very sexually explicit, yet, like, totally sexless music.
Oh, yeah.
It's like someone who hasn't had sex bragging about all the sex.
Yeah, like,
yeah,
My Humps
is really
like,
strange.
My Humps is, like, it's so... It was, like, kind of transgressive lyrically, but there's no, like... That is not what I would call sexy music. There's nothing sensuous about it. There's
right.
nothing, like, that gets you going. I mean, admittedly, when I was in, like, fifth grade and it was on the radio, I was, like, mad uncomfortable because, like, my mom would be driving me to school.
Backpack
and,
over
and,
the pants.
And I was just like, oh, this is some shit. But, like, when I actually, like, think about the song itself, like, there's nothing, there's no energy, there's nothing sexy about it,
yeah.
which is weird.
But it's provocative.
It gets the people going.
Monkey Business comes out, and then they kind of go away for a while. And the reason they go away for a while is for a couple reasons.
They made so much goddamn money at that point.
There's definitely that. But honestly, they made so much money in the years to come because they started going on all of these sponsored tours.
Wow.
Like Coca-Cola, and I can't remember if it was Honda or Hyundai, one of those brands. Like, they kept getting sponsored tours and just getting caked off of them. And then that was... People were kind of privy to that and were like, so I was right about you guys. You guys are just out here trying to make money. And then the other thing, of course, was that Fergie wanted to make her own album, Duchess. And so...
That album fucking sucks.
It's got some bangers.
I actually haven't heard it. I mean, I've heard it, but I haven't revisited it.
Dude, I mean, T to the A to the S-T-E-Y, Girl You Tasty...
That's will.i.am. You can't put that over here.
That was in the Fergie song. It's spelled tasty wrong.
Glamorous is an
That's,
all
Okay, time. Glamorous isn't a bad song.
Like, there's
so
a lot
good.
Of great, great spelling on this album. Do you guys... I think I was with you guys when the National Anthem thing happened. For those that don't know, Fergie one time sang the National Anthem and it was bad.
Really
yeah.
bad.
I mean, have you ever seen that meme of Draymond Green's face just kind of... smiling and hovering over a basketball court. It was him reacting to that.
And I think when I saw that, I was with you guys. And we were at a bar, and they were playing... What game was it? It was, like, the All-Star game?
I can be honest, I don't remember.
And but the game was on silent at whatever bar we were on. And we started talking about, like good for Fergie, like... Good on her for getting her shine. We started talking about, like, all the things that Fergie and the Black Eyed Peas contributed. Little did we know that what was happening was, like, getting memes so heavy because we weren't listening to it.
Oh, yeah.
We just saw her performing it.
It was like, oh, shout out to Fergie.
So they go away for Fergie to have her album, for them to go on all these sponsored tours. That's when people start getting the sense that these are really just capitalist machines and not actual artists. And then they come out with their album, The End, which is an acronym that stands for The Energy Never Dies. By then, their public perception wasn't very good, and they promoted this album with a single, Boom Boom Pow, which this music that they're making is a huge departure from the music that they were making on Ella Funk and Monkey Business. It is sort of inspired by discotheque music and electronica, and is incredibly, it's incredibly synth-based and incredibly in-your-face.
Yeah.
Will.i.am has had an interview where he talked about why they went to this new sound, and it was inspired by 3 months that he spent in Australia.
Okay.
And he said
he went abroad.
That's honestly what it sounded like when I read this. It was like those like high schoolers who like, quote unquote, build the school in Africa and like came back a new person. It was just him partying in Australia.
Dude, he actually just went there and like dropped acid with Kevin Parker and then came back and like didn't
So he said that the sound was inspired by the Presets, which I didn't know that I knew this group, but they have a song called Are You the One? Where are you the one?
Dude,
are they
like the Presets as in like when you like buy FL Studio? I was inspired by like the Preset 808 on my like Ableton that I downloaded, and I just like boom, boom, boom.
So I decided to go and listen to some of their music, the Presets, and I can kind of hear where the inspiration came from. It's very synth heavy. It's very much built on catchphrases, in a lyrical sense. But I was listening to the Presets, and to me, it had such a sense of humor to it,
mm-hmm.
and it had such a sense of like levity that this project doesn't have.
Wow!
And what I wrote in like all caps and in bold in the notes that I sent you guys was, how did the guy who made Let's Get It Started make an album that feels so lifeless? Because to me, like, again, I know I keep saying this, but to me, the best quality of their early music, including their first two albums, is that it just felt so vibrant and full of life, even if it wasn't the best written stuff or the best whatever. Like, to me, it was just so, it was so vibrant. And this album is so soulless to me. It's like the equivalent of someone smiling at you with like totally blank eyes.
Well,
there's just no like soul to it, and I don't want that to sound like it's because they use fake instruments or
because
they use auto tune
real music. Like,
that.
Like that shit is all fine, but it's just like
there's no personality. There's no sense of humor. There's nothing.
I guess also what feels so cynical about this album is that it's the rise of this album was so paired with like the kind of like Steve Jobs celebrity, like iTunes is huge now, like the whole kind of like burgeoning like Silicon Valley tech bro music revolution. The music I most associate with that whole like aesthetic in the late 2000s is like this album.
It's not the Far East Movement.
But think about how similar the Far East Movement is to this.
Yeah.
Like,
but
they're
that was
very
also
similar.
A few years after this album came out.
Was it?
Because this was like 2009. I feel like they were like 2010.
Like, you don't really have Fly Like a G6 without like Boom Boom Pow.
That's true. Like, something I got really just like obsessed with listening to the END for this podcast was imagining them writing it as the U.S. government is writing all of the legislation to bail out the banks. It's like,
oh,
that,
God, that's so depressing.
That is what the cultural moment this album is coming out in, is Obama just won, and they're spending hundreds of billions of dollars to try and make the economy not crash.
but I mean, if we could actually just, like, talk a bit more about the songs, I mean,
can we talk about I Got a Feeling?
Yeah.
I Got a Feeling, to me, is by far the most redeemable thing on this album. Because...
Oh, boy. Okay.
Because here's the thing. I think I Got a Feeling is so shitty But it's so funny, and, like, not in a way that I think they, like, really intended, but,
no,
like, if you were to actually play I Got a Feeling, like, at a party right now, we would all sing along, and we'd find it kind of ironic, and we'd be like, Mazel Tov. Like, it's so dumb. Like, I can't hate on it.
I have to say, so this is the third episode of this podcast.
Yep.
I have, listening to I Got a Feeling, I've never had such a visceral experience of, like, I want this to be over so bad.
Dude, it's
my
the
thumb,
only thing on this I like.
I swear to God, as soon as those first chords came on, which sounds like an alarm going off, my thumb, like, instinctively just, like, reached for the skip button. but I remember laughing at this. I was on the Wikipedia page for the song, and the quote that Will.i.am gave for the song was, quote, "It's dedicated to all the party people out there in the world that want to go out and party." And that was the entire quote.
I mean, okay.
Did you know that the when he goes, "I got a feeling," he goes, "woo," that it's that "woo" is sampled from "Every Breath You Take."
Well, like,
that's point one for Will.i.am. That's kind of cool, actually. That never would have occurred to me.
And it also Will.i.am said that the melody was inspired by a song by U2, and I listened to that song and I didn't hear any. What was the name of the song?
Some real inspiration, then.
I'll go crazy if I don't go crazy tonight.
What?
Yeah.
I don't know.
So another reason that came up time and time again of why people hate the Black Eyed Peas was people kept saying it's because their music is everywhere and, like, I can't get away from it. And to me, that's, like, a very circular reasoning, because lots of music is played all the time. There are lots of hits that, like, you can't escape. But it seemed like I Got a Feeling in particular was, like, people rallied against it. I read, there's a really amazing piece. I don't know if you guys saw this. It's called Why I Got a Feeling is the Most Depressing Song in Existence. and it's this guy from, it's a woman from Noisy who's talking about how she would, it would play all the time while she was, like, bartending, which is already, like, a really depressing job. She said that one of the reasons that the song is so depressing is because it reminds you of all those times where you got excited about a night that was gonna happen. And she was like, no good night has ever started with, oh man, tonight's gonna be so epic. Like, all of those nights always end up being such a letdown.
Yeah.
It is like New Year's Eve where you're like, New Year's Eve, let's go! And then it always is just so shitty. She was like, it's that, but in a song. It's someone getting really excited for a night that never actually ends up being that good.
Like, I know we'll have a good time, but, you know, remains to be seen how hard they actually partied.
Exactly. And she's like, there's something really depressing about, like, thinking about all those nights where you were, like, young and, like, 19 and you thought you knew what a good time meant. And you were like, tonight's going to be great. I'm going to drink some beer and blah, blah, blah. And then it ends up being a really depressing night. And she goes, that this song just brings me back to all of those times that happened.
Well, that makes it actually, that kind of adds, like, a sort of depth to it that actually kind of makes it sound better. Like,
don't give Will.i.am that agency. He wasn't intending that.
All right. I mean, it is also funny, though, to think that, like, you can make simple music that's just about partying, and you can do it with so much style and so much flair, but this album just, like, lacks that.
Yeah.
Do we have anything to say about I'm a Bee, by the way?
Good song.
I actually kind of like it.
Ambi's not that bad. Ambi's kind of weird because, like, the beat is, like, another one of those, like, kind of shitty, kind of, like, techno beats, but there's, like, this sort of, like, orchestra, there's, like, a string section on it. Like,
yeah.
And it's, like, actually, I'm like, oh, this is, like, okay.
That song has, like, some sense of personality to it.
And, like, to go with that, I remember the single cover was a beat.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, well, you're not totally fucking stupid.
Right.
You get that this is kind of funny. And you kind of, it kind of, like, they kind of preempted all, like, the memes of, like, well, kind of sounds like they're
right.
Saying I'm a bee. It's like, well, the cover's a B. So clearly they anticipated that. So
the other song that I was like, this doesn't suck. They have a song called Rocking to the Beat that I'd recommend on the album, but I can't tell if I like it because it's good or because it reminds me of Daft Punk. And I think of Daft Punk as being a good group. That song, that was a song that was very synthy and very auto-tuned, but, like, still felt full and complete and with, like, a personality to it. So it's not like everything on this album doesn't work, but most of it to me is just really upsetting. On Nickelback episode, we talked about what would it take to convince you to see them live. And so I kind of want to do the same thing where I try to barter with you guys to come see Black Eyed Peas with me and see where your bottom line is.
You mean, like, how expensive are the tickets?
Yeah, and, like, what venue and under what circumstances. So let's say I come to you guys and say that they're performing at MSG and tickets are like $70.
So I would pay $70 to see them, but not at MSG.
Okay.
The reason being that I actually think a Black Eyed Peas show, if you can actually move around in a crowd, would be a lot of fun.
So like Terminal 5 or something?
Yeah, I'd pay $70 to see
you really?
Terminal 5, yeah.
That was
That'd
so much easier
fun.
Than I thought it was going to be.
I mean, I like Monkey Business. They're going to play the hits, man. Like,
what about you?
I mean, like...
What if $70 to go to Terminal 5 and they were only playing Ella Funk and Monkey Business?
Probably still no.
Really?
I mean, I think I would have trouble with like half that concert, even so. Like, it would have to be like, it'd have to be like $50. You know what I mean? Like, maybe 50.
So if I text you guys, like, tickets are $50, Terminal 5, they're only playing the hits from Ella Funk and Monkey Business.
I'd be there in a heartbeat.
All right. Black Eyed Peas, get at us.
Yeah, fair enough. Did they go on like the "Remember We Were Good Once" tour?
That does sound like what they would call it if that ever happened. Do you want to go? I have on my notes here. Let Matt go off about the hardest ever.
Oh shit! For anybody out there that like does not remember Will.i.am's solo career, but just wants like one microcosm that will tell you everything you need to know about what his post Black Eyed Peas solo career was, look up the video for. First of all, the name of the song is THE, The Hardest Ever.
So, cool.
So it's not a song called The Hardest Ever. It's a song called The. Kind of like the END. It's like THE, The Hardest Ever. And basically the whole video is Will.i.am rapping about being the hardest ever over this terrible beat. Just in an on-brand way, the video probably costs like $200 million fucking dollars to make. It's like, he's like... He's like, there's these incredible amounts of special effects that look really good. Like, he spent so much money on this video for this, like, mid-ass song. And, like, you know, the ways that he describes how hard he's going, you know, he says, and this was, like, at the peak of, like, hashtag rap, which, like, I have a lot to say about, but he goes, this beat is the shit. Feces. And the beat, like, drops out. Like, it's, like, the best line. He's like, this beat is the shit. Feces. Like, there's no... Oh, my God. He says, I'm going hard. Statues. And then, in a way, it kind of wins through, like, sheer force of will, because it's so... Force of Will should have been his album name. Get at me,
Will. Will.i.am. Get the fuck out of
us. Dude, but, like, I mean, you know, it's just... It's so goofy. The rapping is so bad. Everything, like, it has a stupid-ass title. Like, there's no element of this that is not... Bad.
You're leaving out the most ridiculous part of this song.
We're getting to that. But like, when I say it sort of wins through sheer force of like, it's the audacity of it is actually very compelling. The features on this song are, first of all, J-Lo, who's not even on the set of the video. She's just like on a screen somewhere telling you that you could go hard
mm-hmm.
or you go harm, you go home. And then the second feature is fucking Mick Jagger. And... Dude, and the video is, the ending is that Will.i.am gets into a fucking space, like, spacecraft. He, and I'm like, I'm not even kidding, like, look up the video. He enters the monolith from 2001 Space Odyssey with, like, the fucking colors and shit. And, like, they even have the shots of him in the cockpit, like, reacting to it. And then the monolith with the colors is Mick Jagger singing that you can go hard, you can go home. And it's so fucking bad.
Jarring.
And but and yet somehow you kind of walk away from it and like you're kind of mad at Will.i.am, but you're also like, damn, like, okay, man, you spent so much fucking money on this. And like the it's in such bad taste that like it's actually kind of delicious. Like, I don't know, like
I do before. Oh, right, because are we gonna talk about the Britney Spears song?
Scream and Shout.
Scream and Shout remix.
With the Scream and Shout the Scream and Shout remix.
We don't have to, but can I at least share that there is an IMDb page for the music video? The Scream and Shout remix, which is Will.i.am featuring Britney Spears, Hit Boy, Waka Flocka Flame, Lil Wayne, and Diddy.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
And the description is the music video, this is the first sentence of the description. The music video's theme is multiplicity. The video opens with intercalated beauty shots of Will.i.am and Spears until the scene cuts to Will.i.am using his iPhone camera add-on and social network IM Plus, Will I Am says, bring the action, and Spears is seen wearing a skin-tight skirt and a long-sleeved top with bare midriff and cleavage.
Dude, who
Spears
wrote this
Spears performs
shit?
Fast movements to the song's beat and sings the lyrics.
You mean dancing?
Okay, so their most recent album was called Masters of the Sun, and they announced that they were going to release this album without Fergie, and they've claimed that Fergie has not left the group, but that she just didn't join them for this because she's working on her own album. So what's interesting about this album, there's a couple things that are interesting about this album. So first of all, it's sort of a return to form. It's finding them making more traditional hip-hop. It serves as a companion piece to a comic book that they wrote called Masters of the Sun. And I read the description of Masters of the Sun. I want to read this because they pull from so many disparate, confusing genres that to read this is nonsensical. It says, Masters of the Sun mixes LA gang culture, b-boyism, and Egyptology to tell the tale of a hip-hop group from the Bronx who must battle an ancient alien god set on controlling the earth. While on tour in L.A., a zombie outbreak breaks loose when a drug manufactured by the alien starts turning the group into zombies. The story serves as an allegory for the crack epidemic of the 1980s, where soulless husk zombies of the comics stand in for people addicted to crack cocaine. But it's Egyptology.
That's nice. Cool.
It's Egyptology, an alien, and a zombie outbreak. And I was listening to this album, and there's no fucking... This is not a concept album. And one thing that drove me crazy about the album is that they claim that it's supposed to be an allegory for how the government, like, pushed crack onto the black community, but all of the... Which they did, but all of the lyrics on this album are, basically shaming addicts.
Oh.
It's like, I don't do drugs, I don't drink, you shouldn't either.
I mean, that sounds very, kind of, 80s, 90s to me. Like, there's a sort of, kind of, Grandmaster flashiness to, don't be a dummy and do some crack. Like, you know what I mean?
Right. But the description, the way that they describe the comic book makes it seem like it's supposed to be this woke interpretation of how, the government is actually, responsible for all this plight. But
actually, you're just a little bitch if you do drugs.
That's basically what it is. There's no lyric anywhere that's like, the government did this to us, black people need to stand.
Well, you gotta read the comic for that. You gotta double dip. You gotta pay the money to get the story.
Not going to. The other thing that really kind of infuriated me was, so obviously with Fergie being gone and this being a more hip-hop focused album, Taboo and Apple the App kind of come back into focus. And again, they're much better rappers than Will.i.am. But Taboo especially, they all did this, but Taboo especially kept having lines where he was shitting on mumble rappers and saying that hip-hop needs to get back to its roots, and I can't understand what you're saying when you mumble at me, and I'm like, Taboo, what leg are you standing on right now? It was so infuriating to hear an album where they were like, whack MCs, blah, 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 blah.
You guys are whack MCs. Even though we can understand you, you're still whack.
do you think Taboo has ever met Future?
I don't know. Taboo met Justin Timberlake, and that's wild enough for me.
I love imagining just really any member of the Black Eyed Peas meeting Future.
They are the future. And with that,
yeah. What I'll say about the Black Eyed Peas, the END and forward, is I think there's low key something almost kind of nefariously bad about them. This will sound very extreme, but on Friday, I went to MoMA PS1 to go see an exhibit called Theaters of Operation.
Nerd.
Which was about the Gulf War and the invasion of Iraq. And there is a piece about how the United States uses American music to torture people. Mm-hmm. And they essentially use it to, break detainees' will. And, they call it futility music to demonstrate the futility of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And this artist's point was essentially that... the United States doing this is very interesting because most empires see culture as the end of their imperial sort of operations, but the U.S. is unique because it uses its own culture as a literal weapon to try to break people down, and that part of this is this metaphor of American power. And I don't think that I think a Black Eyed Peas could be used that way. I'm not saying that they're designed to torture people, but what I will say is that the END and going forward, they're, like, such, like, terrifying vectors of a certain kind of, like, hollowed out culture that feels really explicitly designed to make you a fucking idiot.
Dude, I mean, all I know is after about, like, 19, after, like, 19 straight hours of my humps, like, I'll tell you where the bomb is,
yeah.
Even if I don't know, like, I'll tell you where it is.
To be able to make all of this music where you're just such a voracious cannibal of genre for no fucking reason, and you're able to make these songs about absolutely fucking nothing, in which you express nothing about yourself, and it's like, part of the reason this music is so sexist is because, like, it's only tropes. It's not even like, oh, I want to make songs for people who party. It's like, I want to make songs that are composites of, like, party tropes. It's like, you are literally just designed to, like, be this just, like, fucking wave of just bullshit. So,
I gotta say, this is the first time I've done one of these episodes where I went into research getting, like, with an open heart and an open mind, like I always do, and I walked away being like, yeah, they kind of suck. but what I will say, just for the purposes of this podcast, is what I found interesting was that for me, all of the reasons that they suck didn't have that much to do with all of the reasons that I read why they suck. It's not because Fergie joined the group. It's not because they make pop music. Pop music is great. Like, pop
yeah.
music is amazing. Women have a welcome place in hip-hop.
Women are great, Ben Barzilai.
Women are great, Ben Barzilai, and that's why I'm running for president in 2020. And it also doesn't have anything to do with the fact that they, like, are out here trying to make money, or that they're using autotune or synths, and it has nothing to do with the fact that their music gets played so incessantly. I think those are just really easy things to point to. And the only way to really get to the bottom of why you hate Black Eyed Peas is to listen to all the songs that just objectively aren't that good. Thanks so much, guys. Thanks for doing this with me again. You guys have an open invitation.
I go hard.
Yeah, thank you.
Statues.
thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you guys enjoy it. You know, subscribe, rate, review. Let me know what you think, and if there's anything that we should cover on this show, let me know, and I will see you next time. Thanks, guys.